Winston Churchill, from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. Section 6, Career Between the Wars. In October 1922, Churchill underwent an operation to remove his appendix. Upon his return, he learned that the government had fallen and a general election was looming. The Liberal Party was now beset by internal division, and Churchill's campaign was weak. He lost his seat at Dundee to prohibitionist Edwin Scrymgeour, quipping that he had lost his ministerial office, his seat, and his appendix all at once. Churchill stood for the Liberals again in the 1923 general election, losing in Leicester, but over the next few months he moved towards the Conservative Party, although initially using the labels anti-socialist and constitutionalist. Less than a year later, in the general election of 1924, he was elected to represent Epping as a constitutionalist with Conservative backing. A statue in his honour in Woodford Green was erected when Woodford Green was part of the Epping constituency. The following year, he formally rejoined the Conservative Party, commenting wryly that
"Anyone can rat," change parties, "but it takes a certain ingenuity to re-rat."
He was appointed Chancellor of the Exchequer in 1924 under Stanley Baldwin, and oversaw the United Kingdom's disastrous return to the gold standard, which resulted in deflation, unemployment, and the miners' strike that led to the general strike of 1926. This decision prompted the economist John Maynard Keynes to write The Economic Consequences of Mr. Churchill, correctly arguing that the return to the gold standard would lead to a world depression. Churchill later regarded this as one of the worst decisions of his life. To be fair, it must be noted that he was not an economist, and that he acted on the advice of the governor of the Bank of England, Montagu Norman, of whom Keynes said, "Always so charming, always so wrong." During the general strike of 1926, Churchill was reported to have suggested that machine guns be used on the striking miners. Churchill edited the government's newspaper, the British Gazette, and during the dispute he argued that
"either the country will break the general strike, or the general strike will break the country."
Furthermore, he controversially claimed that the fascism of Benito Mussolini had
"rendered a service to the whole world,"
showing, as it had,
"a way to combat subversive forces."
That is, he considered the regime to be a bulwark against the perceived threat of communist revolution. At one point, Churchill went as far as to call Mussolini the
Roman genius, the greatest lawgiver among men.
The Conservative government was defeated in the 1929 general election. In the next 2 years, Churchill became estranged from the Conservative leadership over the issues of protective tariffs and Indian Home Rule, which he bitterly opposed. He denigrated the father of the Indian independence movement, Mahatma Gandhi, as
"a half-naked fakir who ought to be laid bound hand and foot at the gates of Delhi and then trampled on by an enormous elephant with a new viceroy seated on its back."
When Ramsay MacDonald formed the national government in 1931, Churchill was not invited to join the cabinet. He was now at the lowest point in his career, in a period known as the Wilderness Years. He spent much of the next few years concentrating on his writing, including Marlborough, His Life and Times, a biography of his ancestor John Churchill, the first Duke of Marlborough, and A History of the English-Speaking Peoples, which was not published until well after World War II. He became most notable for his outspoken opposition towards the granting of independence to India, for which you should see Simon Commission and the Government of India Act 1935. Soon, though, his attention was drawn to the rise of Adolf Hitler and the dangers of Germany's rearmament. For a time, he was a lone voice calling on Britain to strengthen itself to counter the belligerence of Germany. Churchill was a fierce critic of Neville Chamberlain's appeasement of Hitler, leading the wing of the Conservative Party that opposed the Munich Agreement, which Chamberlain famously declared to mean peace in our time. He was also an outspoken supporter of King Edward VIII during the abdication crisis, leading to some speculation that he might be appointed Prime Minister if the King refused to take Baldwin's advice and consequently the government resigned. However, this did not happen, and Churchill found himself politically isolated and bruised for some time after this. Section 7. Role as Wartime Prime Minister. At the outbreak of the Second World War, Churchill was appointed First Lord of the Admiralty, as he was in the first part of the First World War, and the word went out to the Royal Navy's home fleet in the signal sent out from the Admiralty, "Winston's back!" In this job, he proved to be one of the highest profile ministers during the so-called Phoney War, when the only noticeable action was at sea. Churchill advocated the preemptive occupation of the neutral Norwegian iron ore port of Narvik and the iron mines in Kiruna, Sweden, early in the war. However, Chamberlain and the rest of the war cabinet disagreed, and the operation was delayed until the German invasion of Norway, which was successful despite British efforts. In May 1940, directly upon the German invasion of France by a surprising lightning advance through the Low Countries, it became clear that the country had no confidence in Chamberlain's prosecution of the war. Chamberlain resigned, and Churchill was appointed Prime Minister and formed an all-party government. It has been alleged that, prior to being appointed Prime Minister, the King considered appointing Lord Halifax instead. The reason for this is claimed to be that the monarchy feared it would not survive the war, and that the pro-appeasement Halifax would have negotiated a settlement with Hitler that would allow Britain to stay out of the war and preserve the monarchy, although the commonly accepted version of events states Halifax turned down the post because he feared he could not govern effectively as a member of the House of Lords instead of the House of Commons. It has been insinuated that Churchill used blackmail to get his way. Although traditionally the Prime Minister does not advise the King on the former's successor, Chamberlain wanted someone who could command the support of all three major parties in the House of Commons. A meeting with the two other party leaders led to the recommendation of Churchill. George VI was thus allegedly reluctantly forced to accept Churchill as Prime Minister. Breaking with tradition, the former did not send Chamberlain a message expressing regret over his resignation. Churchill's greatest achievement was that he refused to capitulate when defeat by Germany was a strong possibility, and remained a strong opponent of any negotiations with Germany, maintaining the policy of unconditional surrender of the Nazi Germany, which was agreed by the Big Three at the Tehran Conference. In response to previous criticisms that there had been no clear single minister in charge of the prosecution of the war, Churchill created and took the additional position of Minister of Defence. He immediately put his friend and confidant, the industrialist and newspaper baron Lord Beaverbrook, in charge of aircraft production. It was Beaverbrook's astounding business acumen that allowed Britain to quickly gear up aircraft production and engineering that eventually made the difference in the war. Churchill's speeches were a great inspiration to the embattled United Kingdom. His first speech as Prime Minister was the famous, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears and sweat" speech. He followed that closely with two other equally famous ones, given just before the Battle of Britain. One included the immortal line, "We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender." The other included the equally famous, "Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that, if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour." At the height of the Battle of Britain, his bracing survey of the situation included the memorable line, "Never in the field of human conflict
For so much old, lie so many, do so few.
Which engendered the enduring nickname The Few for the Allied fighter pilots who won it. His good relationship with Franklin D. Roosevelt secured the United Kingdom vital supplies via the North Atlantic Ocean shipping routes. It was for this reason that Churchill was relieved when Roosevelt was re-elected. Upon re-election, Roosevelt immediately set about implementing a new method of not only providing military hardware to Britain without the need for monetary payment, but also of providing, free of fiscal charge, much of the shipping that transported the supplies. Put simply, Roosevelt persuaded Congress that repayment for this immensely costly service would take the form of defending the USA, and so Lend-Lease was born. Churchill had 12 strategic conferences with Roosevelt, which covered the Atlantic Charter, Europe First strategy, the Declaration by the United Nations, and other war policies. Churchill initiated the Special Operations Executive, SOE, under Hugh Dalton's Ministry of Economic Warfare, which established, conducted, and fostered covert, subversive, and partisan operations in occupied territories, with notable success, and also the Commandos, which established the pattern for most of the world's current special forces. The Russians referred to him as the British Bulldog. This could also be reflected by Churchill's willingness to face danger compared to his two allies, Franklin Roosevelt and Joseph Stalin, who appeared reluctant in visiting enemy lines. This meant Churchill was very close to the Germans and ran the high risk of assassination. Indeed, Churchill was close to death, if not by his enemies, but his hard work ran the risk of health problems. This was shown by a mild heart attack he suffered in December 1941 at the White House, and also in December 1943, due to pneumonia. There have been rumours that Churchill's heart actually stopped, but his bodyguard administered the correct procedure and then it was covered up. However, this has never been confirmed. Some of the military actions during the war remain controversial. Churchill was at best indifferent, and perhaps complicit, in the Great Bengal Famine of 1943, which took the lives of at least 2.5 million Bengalis. Japanese troops were threatening British India after having successfully taken neighbouring British Burma. Some consider the British government's policy of denying effective famine relief a deliberate and callous scorched earth policy adopted in the event of a successful Japanese invasion. Churchill supported the bombing of Dresden shortly before the end of the war. Many have since maintained that the city was primarily a civilian target, with little military value. However, the bombing was seen at the time as being helpful to the Soviet allies. Churchill was party to treaties that would redraw post-World War II European and Asian boundaries. These were discussed as early as 1943. Proposals for European boundaries and settlements were officially agreed to by Harry S. Truman, Churchill, and Stalin at Potsdam. The settlement concerning the borders of Poland, i.e. the boundary between Poland and the Soviet Union and between Germany and Poland, was viewed as a betrayal in Poland during the post-war years, as it was established against the views of the Polish government in exile. Churchill was convinced that the only way to alleviate tensions between the two populations was the transfer of people to match the national borders. As he expounded in the House of Commons in 1944,
"The expulsion is the method which, in so far as we have been able to see, will be the most satisfactory and lasting. There will be no mixture of populations to cause endless trouble. A clean sleep will be made. I am not alarmed by these transferences, which are more possible in modern conditions."
The transfers were in the end carried out, in a way which resulted in hardship and death for many of those transferred. Churchill opposed the effective annexation of Poland by the Soviet Union, and wrote bitterly about it in his books, but he was unable to prevent it at the conferences. On October the 9th, 1944, he and Eden were in Moscow, and that night they met Stalin in the Kremlin, without the Americans. Bargaining went on throughout the night. Churchill wrote on a scrap of paper that the boss had a 90% interest in Romania, Britain a 90% interest in Greece, both Russia and Britain a 50% interest in Yugoslavia. When they got to Italy, the boss ceded that country to Churchill. The crucial questions arose when the ministers of foreign affairs discussed percentages in Eastern Europe. Molotov's proposals were that Russia should have a 75% interest in Hungary, 75% in Bulgaria, and 60% in Yugoslavia. This was the boss's price for ceding Italy and Greece. Eden tried to haggle. Hungary 75-25, Bulgaria 80-20, but Yugoslavia 50-50. After lengthy bargaining, they settled on an 80-20 division of interest between Russia and Britain in Bulgaria and Hungary, and a 50-50 division in Yugoslavia. US Ambassador Harriman was informed only after the bargain was struck. This gentleman's agreement was sealed with a handshake. Section 8. After World War II. Although the importance of Churchill's role in World War II was undeniable, he had many enemies in his own country. His expressed contempt for a number of popular ideas, in particular public health care and better education for the majority of the population, produced much dissatisfaction amongst the population, particularly those who had fought in the war. Immediately following the close of the war in Europe, Churchill was heavily defeated in the 1945 election by Clement Attlee and the Labour Party. Some historians think that many British voters believed that the man who had led the nation so well in war was not the best man to lead it in peace. Others see the election result as a reaction not against Churchill personally, but against the Conservative Party's record in the 1930s under Baldwin and Chamberlain. Winston Churchill was an early supporter of the pan-Europeanism that eventually led to the formation of the European Common Market and later the European Union, for which one of the three main buildings of the European Parliament is named in his honour. Churchill was also instrumental in giving France a permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council, which provided another European power to counterbalance the Soviet Union's permanent seat. Churchill also occasionally made comments supportive of a world government. For instance, he once said,
"Unless some effective world supergovernment for the purpose of preventing war can be set up, the prospects for peace and human progress are dark. If it is found possible to build a world organization of irresistible force and inviolable authority for the purpose of securing peace, there are no limits to the blessings which all men enjoy and share."
At the beginning of the Cold War, he famously popularized the term the Iron Curtain, which had been first used in the 19th century. The term entered the public consciousness after a 1946 speech at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, when Churchill, a guest of Harry S. Truman, famously declared,
"From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe. Warsaw, Berlin, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, Belgrade, Bucharest, and Sofia. All these famous cities, and the populations around them, lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere."
Section 9. Second Term. Churchill was restless and bored as leader of the Conservative opposition in the immediate post-war years. After Labour's defeat in the general election of 1951, Churchill again became Prime Minister. His third government, after the wartime national government and the short caretaker government of 1945, would last until his resignation in 1955. During this period, he renewed what he called the special relationship between Britain and the United States and engaged himself in the formation of the post-war order. His domestic priorities were, however, overshadowed by a series of foreign policy crises, which were partly the result of the continued decline of British military and imperial prestige and power. Being a strong proponent of Britain as an international power, Churchill would often meet such moments with direct action. One of the crises he inherited was the nationalisation of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company in Iran. Churchill's government was supportive of the overthrow of the Iranian government of Mohammad Mossadegh by Fazlollah Zahedi in response to this threat. Section 9.1. The Mau Mau Rebellion. In 1951, grievances against the colonial distribution of land came to a head with the Kenya Africa Union demanding greater representation and land reform. When these demands were rejected, more radical elements came forward, launching the Mau Mau Rebellion in 1952. On the 17th of August 1952, a state of emergency was declared, and British troops were flown to Kenya to deal with the rebellion. As both sides increased the ferocity of their attacks, the country moved to full-scale civil war. In 1953, the Lari Massacre, perpetrated by Mau Mau insurgents against Kikuyu loyal to the British, changed the political complexion of the rebellion and gave the public relations advantage to the British. Churchill's strategy was to use a military stick, combined with implementing many of the concessions that Attlee's government had blocked back in 1951. He ordered an increased military presence and appointed General Sir George Erskine, who would implement Operation Anvil in 1954 that broke the back of the rebellion in the city of Nairobi. Operation Hammer, in turn, was designed to root out rebels in the countryside. Churchill ordered peace talks opened, but these collapsed shortly after his leaving office. Section 9.2. The Malayan Emergency. In Malaya, a rebellion against British rule had been in progress since 1948. Once again, Churchill's government inherited a crisis, and once again, Churchill chose to use direct military action against those in rebellion, while attempting to build an alliance with those who were not. He stepped up the implementation of a Hearts and Minds campaign, and approved the creation of fortified villages, a tactic that would become a recurring part of Western military strategy in Southeast Asia. The Malayan Emergency was a more direct case of a guerrilla movement, centred in an ethnic group but backed by the Soviet Union. As such, Britain's policy of direct confrontation and military victory had a great deal more support than in Iran or in Kenya. At the high point of the conflict, over 35,500 British troops were stationed in Malaya. As the rebellion lost ground, it began to lose favour with the local population. While the rebellion was slowly being defeated, it was equally clear that colonial rule from Britain was no longer plausible. In 1953, plans were drawn up for independence for Singapore and other crown colonies in Southeast Asia. The first elections were held in 1955, just days before Churchill's own resignation as Prime Minister, and then in 1957, under Prime Minister Anthony Eden, Malaya became independent. Section 10. Honours. From 1941 to his death, Churchill was the Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports, a ceremonial office. In 1941, Canadian Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King swore him into the Queen's Privy Council for Canada. Although this allowed him to use the honorific title The Honourable and the post-nominal letters PC, both of these were trumped by his membership in the Imperial Privy Council, which allowed him the use of the Right Honourable. In 1953, he was awarded two major honours. He was invested as a Knight of the Garter, becoming Sir Winston Churchill, KG, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature, for his mastery of historical and biographical description, as well as for brilliant oratory in defending exalted human values. A stroke in June of that year led to him being paralysed down his left side. He retired as Prime Minister on the 5th of April 1955 because of his health, but retained his post as Chancellor of the University of Bristol, and remained a Member of Parliament until 1964. In 1959 he became Father of the House, the MP with the longest continuous service. In 1955, after retiring as Prime Minister, Churchill was offered elevation to the peerage in the rank of Duke. He considered the offer, and even chose the name Duke of London. However, he then declined the title, after being persuaded by his son Randolph not to accept it. Since then, only British royals have been made dukes. In 1956, Churchill received the Carls Prize, known in English as the Charlemagne Award, an award by the German city of Aachen to those who most contribute to the European idea and European peace. In 1960, Churchill College, Cambridge, was established as the National and Commonwealth Memorial to Churchill. In 1963, he became the first person to become an honorary citizen of the United States. And Churchill is also the 10th most admired person of the 20th century, according to a Gallup poll. Section 11. Family. On the 12th of September 1908, at the socially desirable St. Margaret's, Westminster, Churchill married Clementine Hozier, a dazzling but largely penniless beauty whom he met at a dinner party that March. He had proposed to actress Ethel Barrymore, but was turned down. They had 5 children together: Diana, Randolph, Sarah, who co-starred with Fred Astaire in Royal Wedding, Marigold, who died in early childhood, and Mary, who has written a book about her parents. Churchill's son Randolph and his grandsons Nicholas Soames and Winston Churchill all followed him into Parliament. The daughters tended to marry politicians and support their careers. Some of the siblings wrote serious books. Clementine's mother was Lady Blanche Henrietta Ogilvie, second wife of Sir Henry Montagu Hozier and a daughter of the 7th Earl of Ely. Clementine's paternity, however, is open to debate. Lady Blanche was well known for sharing her favours and was eventually divorced as a result. She maintained that Clementine's father was Captain William George Bay Middleton, a noted horseman. But Clementine's biographer, Joan Hardwick, has surmised, due to Sir Henry Hozier's reputed sterility, that all Lady Blanche's Hozier children were actually fathered by her sister's husband, Algernon Bertram Freeman Mitford, better known as a grandfather of the infamous Mitford sisters of the 1920s. When not in London, on government business, Churchill usually lived at his beloved Chartwell House in Kent, 2 miles south of Westerham. He and his wife bought the house in 1922 and lived there until his death 43 years later, in 1965. During his Chartwell stays, he enjoyed writing as well as painting, bricklaying, and admiring the estate's famous black swans. For much of his life, Churchill battled with depression, which he called his black dog. This sound file, and all text in the article, are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/fdl.html.